Clay Griffin. Andre, quick dunk. Reggie Bullock from way downtown. Clay Griffin, topside Reggie Bullock. He fires. It falls. Clay Griffin fires. Topside fills it up. A triple. Clay Griffin with a clock at two. Step back gun and got it. Wow. Griffin fires again. Fills it up again.
Oh, nice.
When you're hot, you're hot. Langston finds Andre, who finds the bottom of the net. Luke Kennard open. Buries it.
Nicely done. Read the screen perfectly.
Kennard to Langston Galloway for the long gun. It goes. Blake Griffin, why not? Yes! He hits it. Time runs out. The Pistons.
They're back to 500, George.
Yep, they're a 500 team.
Early in the game, I didn't really think we got the ball moving. But then as the game went on, I thought the ball moved really well. We were really unselfish. I mean, the thing is if you look at the assists, they're spread out across the board. A lot of guys getting in the act, passing the ball. It gets contagious. I didn't think we defended well in the third quarter. A lot of layups. But other than that, I thought we did.
You know, when that ball is moving around and it's changing hands, I think guys just feel more involved in the offense. You know, when that's happening, guys are more eager to take those open shots. And once you see those shots going down, you know, everybody's having fun. Stan's been great, man. He's an excellent communicator. I mean, he knows the game so well, and it's very, very thorough in his preparation. When he gives you all the tools, he's been great with me, just trying to help me feel comfortable in this situation. I told him, you know, on the phone when I first got traded, I've never been in a situation like this before, so I didn't really know how to go about, you know, doing it. But he's been unbelievable, just talking with me every step of the way. My teammates too have been unbelievable, just making me feel like a part of the team since day one.
I mean, we're still going to make the playoffs. I mean, there's no doubt about that. We feel confident in that for sure.
His play and his focus and his effort level is eroding to levels I've never seen before. Mm. He's been guilty of pouting in the past. One of the examples I can give is when his first year back in Cleveland, when he was frustrated with Coach David Blatt and he was frustrated with some of his teammates, he ended up going to Miami while he was on injury treatment. But he was injured then. Right now he's healthy, and that doesn't explain why he is not giving his maximum effort. And I really do think it's a lot about the future as well as the present. They've got defensive issues for sure. They're missing Kevin Love for sure. They're in trade talks for sure. But they really have a gap that's open in the trust level between the ownership and LeBron James. And really, to me, that's the most important negotiation they can have this week, is whether LeBron is going to remain committed to this franchise past this year, because that's going to determine what they ultimately decide to do with their assets.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Hope you're having an outstanding Tuesday afternoon. Because I kind of feel like we are. Kush, am I overstating that? Outstanding Tuesday afternoon?
I'm having a pretty outstanding day myself.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm going to go with outstanding as the word of the day. A lot of good stuff to talk about today. You heard a little bit of Stan Van Gundy in the montage. Pistons have turned things around. What was that, a 7-game losing streak?
Yep.
Then
got to eight.
I'm sorry, it went to eight. Then a win over the Cavaliers. Then a trade, and now 3 wins, actually, in a row. Blake Griffin kind of seeming like he was made for Andre Drummond. Talk about a change in attitude. Talk about a change in the front line after that trade. Blake Griffin is coming over to the Eastern Conference and just doing some work, and he's doing it alongside Andre Drummond, who I know is happy to have that kind of a special type of talent and scorer and rebounder alongside of him. And suddenly things are looking on the upswing for the Pistons. We'll talk a little bit about them with Steve Hinson of DetroitBadBoys.com. That'll be at about 4:10 this afternoon. You also heard in the montage a little bit there on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Tyronn Lue is in a world of trouble. Oh, correction, it's Cleveland. Coaches there don't get in trouble when they suck. Hugh Jackson is 1-31, and he's still the head coach of the Browns. Ty Lue has lost 12 out of 18, and he is still the head coach, and the front office has given him the proverbial, cliched, public show of support. They are not thinking about making a coaching change, despite the fact that it's pretty clear the players on Ty Lue's team have quit on him, and they have quit on LeBron James as well. So you heard a little bit from Ty Lue there, and then also Brian Windhorst, who covers the Cavaliers for ESPN, among other things in the NBA. So we are going to talk about some of that as well. Also, just a little early note Todd Walker is the voice of the Bowling Green State University Falcons. He's going to substitute, pinch hit, if you will, for head coach Michael Huger. We always, well, not always, we try to always have Coach Huger on Tuesdays, just like we have Coach Kowalczyk on Thursdays to talk about MAC basketball. Kowalczyk, of course, from UT and Huger from BG. But Coach has a family issue, and so Todd Walker is going to pinch in and update you on all things BG. That'll be at about 4:40 of the program today. So this first hour, in case you can't do that math, two guests, both of them after 4 o'clock, means this first hour is open. 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. We'll also have a Big Four at 4 coming up after the top of the hour, so you're going to want to stick around for that. It's one of the new fun things we try to do each and every day at 4 o'clock. We'll have 4 big something or other. It just depends on the day, and you'll find out what it is a little bit after 4 o'clock. All right, I kind of want to start this conversation with the end of the montage, and that is the commentary you just heard from Brian Windhorst, because I want to talk about one of my favorite subjects, LeBron James. And I know that I tick off a lot of people when I share my true feelings about the king of the NBA, the king, the chosen one, a man who has been, of course, a three-time NBA champion, a man who has been to 7 straight NBA finals, a man who has been a 4-time league MVP. Kind of hard to find, you know, a lot to disagree with there. Kind of difficult to find something to complain about. Well, don't ever say that I didn't do my level best at trying. No, in all seriousness, all of that stuff is out the window. And I will tell you this, too, and this is what I want to get into in the monologue here this afternoon. All of those great accomplishments are going to be limited, and they're going to be, they certainly can't be cast aside, but they are going to lose some of their luster, can I phrase it that way? And a legacy could be tainted if this becomes the LeBron James that we remember going into his twilight years and into eventually retirement. Yes, the physical specimen that he is, and he is a freak. I've said it on this program this year. In fact, during the Cavaliers, it's hard to believe that this team, which looks now like it's destined for a 6, 7, or 8 seed in the East based on the way they're playing as we approach the All-Star game and the trade deadline, it's hard to believe this is the very same team that had a 19-game winning streak this season. Kush, right? And I didn't imagine that, did I?
No.
19-game winning streak, I think the Cavaliers
put together. You also didn't imagine that it was Jose Calderon, the starting point guard during that stretch.
And then there's that.
I'm sorry I keep coming back to that, but it's just so stark to me right now.
Yeah, well, no, I've been coming back to it for weeks now, so it's okay. Ever since Isaiah Thomas came back, I have been talking about, you know, they were better with Calderon. They were better with Calderon. Isaiah Thomas is not the Isaiah Thomas that they thought they were getting. They got fleeced by Boston in a huge way. Isaiah Thomas is not the player they thought, and Jay Crowder is nowhere as good as under Ty Lue as he was under Brad Stevens. Yes, the coaching matters. But I digress. Let's talk about the state of this team, and let's talk about LeBron James. I'm going to replay for you here a little bit of what Brian Windhorst had to say. And he knows LeBron James. He covered LeBron James in high school. They were at the same place. You know this by now. Windy has been covering LeBron James for pretty much his entire career, especially when LeBron went down to Miami looking for a soul to steal. Brian Windhorst went down, and they created a whole new thing called Heat Check. He was just going to cover the Heat and LeBron James and his three amigos down there, and he did. Then he came back to Cleveland, and so did Brian Windhorst. So he's been kind of LeBron James' puppy dog tail for quite a while now. And that's not to impugn him, by the way, because he's very good at what he does. Just means that's kind of been the beat that he's been on. But I want you to listen, because of his closeness to James, it matters a little bit more. I want you to listen a little bit more to what Brian Windhorst had to say about the Cavaliers' struggles right now, about LeBron James and the way he is playing right now, and the fact that LeBron James may have been jaking it for the better part of this losing run that they've been on. Does that mean faking injury? Jay, if you want to be very specific to that very non-specific colloquial street term, jaking it, no, not faking injury, but not going all out, being lazy, intentionally not playing his hardest. And that's why I'm using it in a very loose way, the term jaking it. And I want you to listen to Windhorst again, and I want you to ask yourself, can you even imagine at any point in his career, anybody describing Michael Jordan in those terms? Can you imagine Magic Johnson ever being described as not playing his hardest, not doing everything he can to win every single game? And I ask you, if you think this is something that's going to stick a little bit to his legacy.
His play and his focus and his effort level is eroding to levels I've never seen before. He's been guilty of pouting in the past. One of the examples I can give is when his first year back in Cleveland, when he was frustrated with Coach David Blatt and he was frustrated with some of his teammates, he ended up going to Miami while he was on injury treatment. But he was injured then. Right now he's healthy, and that doesn't explain why he is not giving his maximum effort. And I really do think it's a lot about the future as well as the present.
All right, let me stop it there. Did you catch that? Please tell me you caught that, right? He has been known to pout before. He has been known to check out and be disinterested before. You remember when he went to Miami a couple of years ago with David Blatt as the head coach and missed 2 weeks? The excuse was back injury. He's rehabbing his back. And, you know, because, Kush, we see this all the time, don't we? Renowned athletic trainers prescribing a Chase lounge on the beach in Miami for back treatment. Lay back on that Chase really, really softly and make sure that you get lots of shade and lots of fluids, usually with umbrellas in those fluids, and then your back will be really, really good. Then you can come back and deal with the coach that you don't like anymore.
I'll tell you this much. I want that doctor first and foremost.
So do I. We all know that was a load of crap then, and it's a load of crap now. He was down there in Miami not because he had an injury. They created the injury for him to say his back was tight. Also that he could get away from David Blatt because he was a pouting, freaking, selfish baby. It's one of the things that led to LeBron James successfully getting David Blatt fired. And it's one of the reasons why I have little to zero respect for the man. Despite all of his accomplishments, greatness, talent, effort in championship games, et cetera, et cetera. It's one of the reasons I have so little respect for the man. As Brian Windhorst said, he pouts. He goes down to Miami. And now, what were those words there at the end of this part of the clip again? Listen.
He ended up going to Miami while he was on injury treatment. But he was injured then. Right now, he's healthy. And that doesn't explain why he is not giving his maximum effort. And
I'm going to hear that again.
And that doesn't explain why he is not giving his maximum effort.
One more time.
And that doesn't explain why he is not giving his maximum effort.
If you are an all-timer, if you are a GOAT, if you are fighting for a place on Mount Rushmore, if you're chasing ghosts, isn't that what he said a couple of years ago? I'm chasing a ghost. In other words, today's game is beneath me. There's nobody in the game now that can compare to me. I'm the greatest player in this game, probably 10 times over. The only thing I can compare myself now to is a ghost. I'm chasing the ghost of Michael Jordan, the ghost of the past, the man widely accepted as the greatest of all time, the GOAT. He's chasing the ghost of the GOAT. When you reach that level, when you're chasing Mount Rushmore status, when you're chasing GOAT status, when you're chasing ghosts as the greatest player of all time, could you ever imagine letting it be said by a reporter, especially one with whom you are friends? He's friends with Brian Windhorst. There's a reason why Windhorst gets great access to him, because he's been covering him since high school. When a friend of yours says the following words about you.
And that doesn't explain why he is not giving his maximum effort, and I really do think it's a lot about the future as well as the present.
You can't be, nobody can say about you if you are chasing GOAT and ghost status that you don't give maximum effort. Maximum effort. Can you imagine in a million years ever anybody, any reporter in the 1980s and early 1990s saying about Larry Bird, he didn't give his maximum effort? Can you ever imagine a reporter saying about Magic Johnson in the 1980s and early 1990s, he was pouting, He went on a two-week vacation in the middle of the season because he didn't like the coach, and he was upset with some of his teammates. So he went away, came up with a phony back injury as an excuse to go down to a tropical paradise while his team played for 2 weeks. Can you ever imagine
He's
that?
He's been guilty of pouting in the past. One of the examples I can give is when his first year back in Cleveland, when he was frustrated with Coach David Blatt and he was frustrated with some of his teammates, he ended up going to Miami while he was on injury treatment. But he was injured then. Right now, he's healthy.
He was healthy then, too. You know it, and I know it, and everybody else knows it. Look at that garbage. He was healthy. It was a pout festival. It was a pout vacation. It was, man, you guys can't hang with me. Man, Coach Blatt wants too much defense out of me. Man, I don't like Coach Blatt's offense. I'm out. See ya. Don't mean to leave you high and dry, teammates. My guys. How many times have you heard LeBron James say, my guys? It's one of the reasons why Kyrie Irving wanted the hell out of Dodge. He got tired of being sunned by LeBron James. It's all about me, myself, and I, and my guys who do what I tell them to do, who follow my lead. Well, how do they follow your lead when you're in Miami on a sunny vacation in the middle of the season? How do they follow your lead when your lead is jaking it?
And that doesn't explain why he is not giving his maximum effort. And I really do think it's a lot about the future as well as the present.
When you are chasing GOAT status, you can never, right? Never allow somebody to say that about you. And when I say allow, I don't mean he should call Brian Windhorst and say, man, you attract that, you shut up. I mean, you don't give him a reason. You don't slack your way through a month of basketball. And he has slacked his way through at least a month of basketball. Are you watching these games? Some of them are unwatchable. I couldn't watch much of the game against Houston the other night when they lost by 30 or whatever the hell it was and they were down by 35. But you know what I did watch? I watched the halftime show. And I watched Jalen Rose and I believe it was Chauncey, Mr. Big Shot, breaking down some of the first half highlights and watching LeBron James stand there and watch. He might as well have bought a gosh blasted ticket as he stood there and watched guys go by him for layups. And guess what happens when you are a Cavalier on the court, not named LeBron James, and you see the leader, the pace setter, the greatest player on the planet, the GOAT, all of the things that he is supposed to be, the captain of the All-Star team that got to pick his team, when you see him going half speed, what are you going to do? Are you going to play your tail off and look like a fool while your leader just coasts to another 30-point loss? Is that what you're going to? No, you're going to just. There's an old saying. It's a saying from nature, but it applies to the business world. And what the hell? It ought to apply to the sports world, too. And you know what it is. Speed of the leader, speed of the pack. No wolf pack ever outruns the alpha male, the leader. No sled dog can outrun the guy at the one at the front. You run at the speed of the leader. When he's going all out, balls to the wall, you're going all out. You got to keep up with the pack. If he's trotting and conserving, you're going to trot and you're going to conserve. And if he decides to lay down and take a nap in the middle of the hunt, the pack lays down and takes a gosh doggone nap. And that's what the leader is doing of this pack. He's napping. He napped through the month of January. He's napping now through the first week of February. And this guy who wants GOAT status? Yeah, LeBron James, I'm putting you on blast. Enough is enough. The selfishness with which you carry yourself and the way that you alienate your teammates is enough. When you've got Windy, who is arguably your biggest defender in the media, calling you out, well, then you better believe you're going to have guys like me calling you out even more. This is ridiculous.
They've got defensive issues for sure. They're missing Kevin Love for sure. They're in trade talks for sure. But they really have a gap that's opened in the trust level between the ownership and LeBron James. And really, to me, that's the most important negotiation they can have this week, is whether LeBron is going to remain committed to this franchise past this year, because that's going to determine what they ultimately decide to do with their assets.
And what is LeBron James going to do? Right? What's he going to do about that trust gap? What's he going to do when the future of the franchise and decisions have to be made on the trade deadline, a pick that needs to be kept in the event that they don't keep LeBron James after this year, the Brooklyn pick, is in the offing. It's very, very important that ownership know, what are you planning to do, LeBron? And what do you think LeBron is going to do? He's going to sit on his hands. He's not going to pick up a phone. He's not going to communicate with Kobe Altman. He's not going to communicate with Dan Gilbert. He's going to say nothing until the trade deadline passes. Then, if they don't make a trade and the rest of the season goes the way that it has for the last month and a half, month and a week, and they stink, then he leaves and blames the organization for not surrounding him with enough, not doing enough at the deadline to make things better. It's up to LeBron James to tell the organization, I'm all in. You know, what was it? Wasn't that their slogan for two of their three finals appearances, Quishlin?
Yeah, the first two.
All in 216, they called it, right?
Something like that. I know the all in part. I don't remember if it's a 216.
Yeah, that was area code.
Right, right.
All in 216. That was their thing on Twitter. It was their hashtag from the Cavaliers. It was what they held up. They wore on T-shirts, signs, everything. All in 216. LeBron James. The time is now. Are you all in or are you not? Because if you announce that you're here for the long run, it is going to make a huge, huge difference in how the team plans to attack the rest of this season, how they attack this trade deadline, and what they can do in the offseason. If everybody knows you're staying, then there's a chance to talk to special free agents in the offseason, because LeBron's staying in Cleveland. Do I want to go to Cleveland and be a part of that? Chances are there is an opening for a second spot in a big three, because Isaiah Thomas ain't going to be here much more than the next couple of months. You think they're going to re-sign him with the way things are going now, not only the way he's playing, but the way he's talking, the way he's chirping, the way he has become kind of a locker room cancer? Not a chance. 5'9" dudes who shoot 35% from the floor and 23% from three, and can't play D because of their 5'9" status, don't get max contracts. And in fact, they don't even get an offer sheet in Cleveland the way he has been. So there's going to be an opening. Are you all in or not? You think he's going to answer? You know well as well as I do. He never answers until the moment of truth. Suddenly having flashbacks to the summer of 2010. Suddenly having flashbacks to the decision on TV. Will there be another televised debacle? No. But will he wait to the last second to make an announcement? Maybe not telling Dan Gilbert what his plans are again? Remember when he didn't even have the God-blasted common courtesy to knock on Dan Gilbert's door or ring up his iPhone in 2010 and say, yo, Dan, just want to thank you for everything, but I'm going on TV in 10 minutes and I've made a decision. I'm going to be leaving. Courtesy. Nope. Wasn't there. And then people want to blame Gilbert for reacting the way he did with the Comic Sans font memo or letter. It's always been about LBJ. There's no I in team, but they inserted one into LBJ because that's what it's all about. Speed of the leader, speed of the pack. Brian Windhorst, what did you say he's doing?
And that doesn't explain why he is not giving his maximum effort. And I really do think it's a lot about the future as well as the present.
Michael Jordan gave maximum effort every game he suited up, including when he was 40 and toiling with the Wizards. Magic, Bird, the Mailman, all of them, all of the greats from this era. If you want to go back to the 80s as being still this part of the modern era, how are you supposed to lead when you won't even step out front? Chris in Toledo, you're on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Go right ahead, Chris.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Sure. I mean, I see everywhere, you know, ESPN, you guys always talking about LeBron and how he's not giving max effort. And, you know, the guy's been to how many straight finals? You know, he gets tired. How many games are in a season? It's tough. You know, the cameras are always on you. So I just say we should give LeBron a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. Sometimes the guy is always there. And we have this conversation each year at this time of the year. And then he's always back at the finals.
Two things. Let me ask this. Do you think that, this is a legit question, do you think that what you're seeing right now is even remotely comparable to the way it was in January when they had their little swoon for a week or two in each of the last couple of years? You don't see a difference here between those ones and this one, which is filled with blowout losses, averaging. They have lost, I think they're 0-9 against the top six teams in the West, and the losses are by an average of 16 points. That's since the start of the season, not just in this swoon since January 1st. Whatever the number is, I heard it this morning at ESPN. I just didn't commit it to memory. Don't you think this is a little bit worse than what we've seen in previous years when they did end up in the finals, Steve? Chris?
It definitely is, but you got to look at this. There's a lot of new pieces to the puzzle here. You got a lot of new players, so it's like give them some time to gel. I mean, it's getting close to like it's time to do it now, but I still think that these guys are going to make a lot of noise. You know, you got D-Wade, you got, you know, a lot of pieces, and I think Isaiah's going to come around. He just was injured. He's got to get back in the swing of things. I mean, I just still think, like, maybe I'll call you back when it comes time, but these guys are going to make noise.
Well, I'll tell you what, you call me back. If it turns around and they go back into the finals, or if they're, you know, threatening for the top seed or whatever, you know, like you're talking about, you call me back and serve me up this plate of crow and I'll eat it. I'm just going to disagree with you for today. No, I will. I'll admit it. Hey, look, I was wrong about the Super Bowl prediction. I had to own that yesterday, too. Maybe I'm dead wrong on this one. But from what I see on a regular basis, and more than that, what people who follow LeBron and the Cavaliers on a daily basis, guys like Windhorst, who are with that team everywhere they go, when these guys are analyzing it and breaking it down in such a way, I tend to take it a lot more seriously. We never saw this much of a lack of effort from LeBron last year. We never saw it the year before. I get it about it being a long season, going to the finals and so on and so forth, but you know what? The Warriors have been to the finals each of the last 3 years, too.
And they
played as many games as anybody else, and they have just been going great guns and continuing to do their thing. So let's keep that in mind, too.
Thanks for taking my call. I just think he's a little bit tired right now. Give it a little bit. He'll be back.
Hey, you know what? I hope you're right. I don't think you are, but I hope you are. Thank you, Chris. Good call. Mommy is next. Jim, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Go ahead,
Bob,
Jim.
Just want to tell you another great job, but we should have seen it coming. When he was a junior in high school, he had a lot of talent around him there, and when they lost to Cincinnati, Roger Bacon, he was looking around, finger pointing, and not giving the effort. So we should have seen it years ago when he was at Akron St. Vincent St. Mary. So it's kind of like he set the table then, and he's still doing the same thing now. That's all I wanted to say. Keep up the good work, and have a great day.
I'll tell you what. You know what? You made a really good point there. Jim, thanks for the call. You make a really good point there. Now, some people might say that's stupid going back to high school. What, are you going to just ignore the first 15 years of his career in which he went to three and five, right?
Yeah.
You know, what, are you going to ignore eight finals appearances and four MVPs? No. The point is this. The point that I think Jim is making and I think is valid as we get to our bottom of the hour sports center is this. When things are going well, he is a tremendous leader. He leads, boy, when things are going well and when there's championships being won and winning streaks being had and playoff games being won. And all, he is a great leader and everybody wants to follow him. When the chips are down, when things aren't going well, can he lift you up with leadership and bring you to a higher place? And the answer to that is no. That is what we have seen far too many times. That's kind of what the caller was talking about from high school, which I had no idea about, by the way. And that's what I'm saying right now. The chips are down. Is he lifting people up to something higher? Or is he alienating his teammates by spending all of his time tweeting and talking about other players in the league? That's right. Jalen Rose put him on blast for that this morning. And I'll see if I can play that for you as we continue as well. It's 3:37. We got the bottom of the hour local sports center coming up right after we get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Wild Stat has to do with these Cavaliers as much as they are struggling. You hear about wire-to-wire wins, right? How often do you bring up wire-to-wire losses, a game in which a team never leads at all from the first bucket to the last? Not many times, but here we are. The Cavaliers, after their blowout loss against Houston over the weekend, now have four wire-to-wire losses since January 1st. And that's tied for the most in the NBA. Yeah, with the bottom feeders. Four wire-to-wire losses since the start of the year. That is something crazy. Or, as we like to say, that's something wild. Your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Right back after this.
Part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling right along. It's 3:45. You want to be a part of our program, you can do so, as the last couple of callers did at 866-240-1065. Remember that number, because in the second hour of the broadcast, we are going to have some more golf show tickets to give away. You'll have to dial that number when we tell you to. Also coming up after the top of the hour at 4 o'clock, we'll have the Big Four at 4. I think you're going to like these. It's going to have to do with the Super Bowl. Nothing to do with the Cavaliers or LeBron James or the NBA stuff we're just talking about. It'll have to do with the Super Bowl, but not this particular Super Bowl. You'll find out exactly what we mean when we do the Big Four at 4. Also, after the 4 o'clock top of the hour Sports Center, we've got a conversation coming with Steve Hinson as we stay in the NBA with the Detroit Bad Boys. How about your Detroit Pistons getting some things done? The trade for Blake Griffin seems to be paying some dividends as the Pistons have righted the ship. They had lost 8 in a row. I thought it was 7 for some reason. I don't know why I forgot the 8th. Was the 8th loss the one to the Cavaliers in the first of the back-to-backs?
Yes. Yeah, because I remember it was supposed. I remember commenting that it was supposed to go to 9 because they were so shorthanded against the Cavs the second time.
Right. And now they've won 4 in a row. So they beat the Cavaliers in that second of the back-to-back in the home and away series. That's right. It's called home and away, not home and home. Shut up, everybody. And then they took down the Grizzlies, the Heat, and last night the Trailblazers. And Blake Griffin is having an awful lot of fun right now.
He sure seems it to be.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that was really a great thing for him. You know the old proverbial change of scenery? You know, you can be a great player, and you're still a great player no matter where you are, but sometimes it just gets old. It gets tired. You hear the same voice. Maybe it's Doc Rivers in this case, the same teammates who kind of grate on your nerves, you grate on theirs. And, you know, Blake Griffin has had some scrapes with guys in the past. You know, Chris Paul and he never really got along very well, even though they were – you know, they were Lob City and all of that stuff, and they were supposed to be such great, you know, complimentary players and so on and so forth. It happens. It happens. You just kind of get tired of the same scene, and you need that change of scenery. And my, oh, my, I would say that's pretty much the case with Blake Griffin, who is playing tremendously. And the Pistons have now turned around their season, which had been kind of going off the rails there for that 8-game losing streak. And now they sit at 504th in the Central Division and in playoff positioning. So,
yeah, I was literally just going to comment on that part. This current win streak, which technically started before when they were in between the players because they were so shorthanded against Cavs, 1-3 in a row with Griffin. And as you mentioned, yeah, they're now they're back to 5. These aren't great things. But it really helps, especially where we were about a week and a half ago pre-trade with this team. They're now back to 500 and tied for that final playoff spot.
Yeah, tied with the Sixers, both at 500, even though Philly is 25-25 and the Pistons are 26-26. But there it is, and obviously, hopefully, bigger things to come. So we'll talk to Steve Hinson about that. I want to shift gears just for a moment away from my LeBron James discussion into Bill Belichick and Malcolm Butler discussion, if I can, for just a moment. It's been one of the big stories of, in fact, it's been the biggest story really in the NFL, quite frankly, after Philadelphia having their party and their parade tomorrow. Well, they started their party by burning down half of their city on Sunday night, which just makes all kinds of sense. Has anybody ever been able to explain this? And I know Detroit has been down this road. But can somebody explain to me how the sentence is, "Yay, we won, so proud of our city, and let's burn the son of a bee down," can go back to back? How can those sentences go back to back? How can you be happy we won, our city rocks, we are Philadelphia, we are awesome, and then now let's tear apart Philadelphia? Somebody explain that to me. I've never understood that. They smashed storefront windows. They looted convenience stores. They turned over cars. They set fires. They tried to tear down lampposts and so on and so forth in celebration. What would you do when you lose? What do you do when you lose? Holy hell, if you tear your city apart in victory, what do? When you lose, I don't know, but I just find that just ridiculous as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, they'll have their official parade tomorrow. Lord knows what kind of damage they'll do when they're actually having a parade. And I will say, by the way, Jim, I can throw stones at Philadelphia from the safety of a brick house here rather than a glass house. You know the old saying about not throwing stones from a glass house, because then they're going to be able to throw them right back at you. The city of Cleveland did a remarkable job after the Cavaliers won their championship 2 years ago, breaking the however many years it was drought since 1964. I kind of forgot the math. What was the math? 54 years or whatever.
52.
52 years. You know, there was none of that. There was none of that. No burnings, no smashing, no car flipping, none of that stuff. And then they had 1.5 million people at the parade downtown out there in Cleveland, and everything was fantastic. So kudos to them. That's the way it's supposed to be done. But outside of the Philadelphia victory, the other story, of course, is, you know, the ongoing saga of Malcolm Butler. How could a guy who played 97.8% of the snaps, Malcolm Butler, this season, the defensive snaps for New England, be told literally after the national anthem, before it was time to trot on the field, oh, by the way, Malcolm, you're not starting. And oh, by the way, Malcolm, you're not playing. He had one snap. He played on special teams. One snap. That's it. The reasons for this, of course, are myriad. There are many, many different reasons. Ian Rappaport made a report saying it's kind of a perfect storm of reasons why he did not play. Bill Belichick, of course, is notorious and not going to tell anybody anything other than we put the guys on the field that we felt would best help us win. I think we all know that that's not true in this particular case, because it would probably have helped them win to have one of their best secondary players who has played 97.8% of the snaps on the field. I think that's pretty standard. That's pretty obvious, right? But Ian Rappaport said the perfect storm had something to do partly with sickness. He had been ill. Partly with bad practice performances the week of the Super Bowl, which, who knows, might have been related to the sickness. Gee, gasp, what do you think? Maybe somebody's sick coming off of that illness and not able to perform to as high of a level in practice. Is that a reason to keep somebody out of the Super Bowl? Does that make a whole lot of sense to me? The third part of the perfect storm was described as, according to Ian Rappaport, a minor rules violation, possibly but not confirmed, possibly related to curfew. So maybe he was out way too late during one of the weeknights while everybody was in Minnesota. And I can tell you this, again, this is part of where my experience in traveling with the Oakland Raiders for 2 years, I learned some things that I never ever knew before. Guys violate curfew, okay? Guys violate curfew, and they do it frequently. And I'll never forget, it wasn't one of my earlier trips. As we traveled, the NFL schedule, and I was on the team flight and staying at the team hotel, and it was one of the earliest trips, and I and a couple of other guys, they weren't even media, but because I worked with the radio network, there were a couple of team assistants, not assistant coaches, but just, you know, part of their ancillary staff. We went out, and we probably stayed out till around 2 o'clock, just not doing stuff that you do when you're much younger, just sitting around kind of watching TV in a bar and having a couple of drinks. But we didn't feel like going back. And this would have been the Friday night of the Friday-Saturday overnight stays in advance of a Sunday game in a given city. Okay. And I remember rolling back to the hotel and walking toward the lobby, the front doors of the lobby, when a couple of guys who will remain nameless got out of a cab, and started kind of speed walking to the door at about 2 o'clock in the morning. And they looked at me. And then who I was, and I looked at them, and I knew who they were. And they were very, very clear and very, very direct. This didn't happen. And, of course, I nodded. I said, what didn't happen? That's it. You know, of course. I'm a member of the media. If I wanted to, I could very easily have, well, if I wanted my career to be over, and if I wanted to be killed by a couple of NFL players, that is. But the point is, that was the first time, and it was very early in my first season traveling with the Raiders, and I can honestly tell you because I was quote unquote cool that way, I gained a lot of respect from those guys, and I was able to score a lot more interviews and a lot more inside information because they knew they could trust me. And by the way, that happened on a regular basis for the rest of those two seasons as well, that I was out there in San Francisco and Oakland. So curfew would be one potential violation that could have led to Malcolm Butler being benched. But given the fact that, as I said, it is a commonality in the National Football League, I'm sure it wasn't exclusive to the Raiders. It was a commonality. I cannot imagine that being alone what would have prompted Bill Belichick to sit Malcolm Butler, which means Bill Belichick is taking it from all sides right now. And if you listen to television, if you read the columnists, the anchors, the radio people, and so on and so forth, Bill Belichick is public enemy number one. How dare he not play Malcolm Butler? He could have been the difference between victory and defeat. I doubt that, by the way. But, you know, Bill Belichick is not answering the questions, and so people are piling on him for this. How could you do this to the guy? And I'm going to say something that might be a little bit unpopular. Because I know a lot of former Patriots players, by the way, have also been on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, pointing out they would be livid if they were still playing and coach had done that to Butler while they were on the team because they felt it hurt the team. And I'm going to take Bill Belichick's side here. And the reason I'm going to do that, despite everything, is because when Ian Rappaport says he's got some of the reasons it was a perfect storm, I promise you there are other reasons that Bill Belichick knows of that Ian Rappaport does not know. There are some of the things that Bill Belichick and his entire staff knows that nobody else outside of the locker room knows. And that if Bill Belichick felt like he needed to sit Malcolm Butler for the entirety of the Super Bowl, a guy who had played 97.8% of the snaps, a Pro Bowl player, who's been one of their most reliable defenders for 3 years, and who, by the way, 2 years ago was a Super Bowl freaking hero, or 3 years ago, a Super Bowl hero for stepping in front of the slant pass thrown by Russell Wilson with the Super Bowl on the line against the Seahawks. If he did that, I promise you there is something much, much deeper than a simple curfew violation and support practices. Bill Belichick does things the Belichick way for a reason. You know, they call this the Patriot way. But when it comes to this, it's the Belichick way. And this is what I think. I think Bill Belichick had to weigh this game and this player's potential impact on the game versus all of the games to come. Ever while I'm head coach. In other words, the next time a guy commits a rules violation, coupled with bad practices, they are immediately, if he would have played Malcolm Butler, they are immediately going to go back to the, you let Butler play in the Super Bowl. He broke the rules during Super Bowl week. How can you sit me now? Bill Belichick will never, ever, ever allow any one person to supersede the Patriot way or the Belichick way. I don't care if it was Tom Brady. Now, that's an extreme example because Tom Brady is probably the most committed man to his craft maybe the sport has ever seen. He doesn't even drink coffee for crying out loud. We know about the TB12 routine and the dietary supplements and the things he'll eat, things he won't eat. He's not going to break a rule. In fact, he was probably watching film for about 72 straight hours before the Super Bowl. But the point being, nobody is bigger than the team in Patriot land, in Belichickville. Nobody. And in my mind, if he needed to let every member of the Patriots know, and here's the kicker. Or the big finish. Every player he ever coaches into the future Patriots, he let every single one of them know, we follow rules here, and if you don't, you don't play. Compare and contrast that to Pittsburgh, where Mike Tomlin, who I took apart pretty good for not having a disciplinary control over his team, not cracking down on his guys, making sure they are locked in and focused on what is supposed to be being done in advance of that Jacksonville loss in the AFC divisional round. Mike Tomlin pretty much gives his guys the run of the asylum. And as such, those undisciplined players lose games. They have absolutely no business losing based on talent and roster. Bill Belichick puts the hammer down. It doesn't matter who you are, what you have done in the past or what you might do in the future. You broke the rules now. You're not playing. And if there is some doubt about this, if you're on the fence about whether or not you agree with that side or the let's be a player's coach side the way a Mike Tomlin would do, and you should have let Malcolm Butler play, 8-3. That's all I'll say. 8-3. Bill Belichick has made it to 8 Super Bowls. Mike Tomlin has been to 3 with the most talented roster in the National Football League for many of those seasons. 8-3, and more importantly, Bill Belichick has owned Mike Tomlin and other player coaches like him. When I say player coaches, meaning player-friendly coaches, owned them in head-to-head matchups throughout his entire career. The Belichick system is the right system. Love him or hate him, you have to respect the fact that it works. It's right. And with that, we'll get to our top of the hour sports center. Got to talk, going back to the NBA, Steve Hinson, DetroitBadBoys.com. Going to talk about the red hot 4-in-a-row winning streak Detroit Pistons coming up as we continue into hour number 2 right here on ESPN 106.5.
I mean, we're still going to make the playoffs. I mean, there's no doubt about that. We feel confident in that, for sure.
His play and his focus and his effort level is eroding to levels I've never seen before. He's been guilty of pouting in the past. One of the examples I can give is when his first year back in Cleveland, when he was frustrated with Coach David Blatt and he was frustrated with some of his teammates, he ended up going to Miami while he was on injury treatment. But he was injured then. Right now he's healthy, and that doesn't explain why he is not giving his maximum effort. And I really do think it's a lot about the future as well as the present. They've got defensive issues for sure. They're missing Kevin Love for sure. They're in trade talks for sure. But they really have a gap that's open in the trust level between the ownership and LeBron James. And really, to me, that's the most important negotiation they can have this week, is whether LeBron is going to remain committed to this franchise past this year, because that's going to determine what they ultimately decide to do with their assets.
Blake Griffin, Andre, quick dunk. Reggie Bullock from way downtown. Blake Griffin, topside Reggie Bullock. He fires. It falls. Blake Griffin fires. Topside fills it up. A triple. Blake Griffin with a clock at 2. Step back gunning. Got it. Griffin fires again. Fills it up again. When you're hot, you're hot. Langston finds Andre, who finds the bottom of the net. Luke Kennard open. Buries it.
Nicely done. Read the screen perfectly.
Kennard to Langston Galloway for the long gun. It goes. Blake Griffin, why not? Yes! He hits it. Time runs out. The Pistons.
They're back to 500, George.
Yep, they're a 500 team.
Early in the game, I didn't really think we got the ball moving, but then as the game went on, I thought the ball moved really well. We were really unselfish. I mean, the thing is if you look at the assists, they're spread out across the board. A lot of guys getting in the act, passing the ball. It gets contagious. I didn't think we defended well in the third quarter. A lot of layups, but other than that, I thought we did.
You know, when that ball's moving around and it's changing hands, I think guys just feel more involved in the offense. You know, when that's happening, guys are more eager to take those open shots. And once you see those shots going down, you know, everybody's having fun. Stan's been great, man. He's an excellent communicator. I mean, he knows the game so well and is very, very thorough in his preparation. When he gives you all the tools, he's been great with me, just trying to help me feel comfortable in this situation. I told him, you know, on the phone when I first got traded, I've never been in a situation like this before, so I didn't really know how to go about, you know, doing it. But he's been unbelievable, just talking with me every step of the way. My teammates too have been unbelievable, just making me feel like a part of the team since day one.
All right, sorry about the technical glitch there. It's 4:14. I want to stay on the topic of the NBA in this half hour. Don't forget, coming up, though, at about 4:40 or so, we're going to get to college basketball. We always like to keep the tabs on our local MAC teams. We talked to Coach Todd Kowalczyk of Toledo on Thursdays, and on Tuesdays, it is Michael Huger, head coach of the Bowling Green State University Falcons. Coach Huger's got a family issue tonight, however, and so Todd Walker is going to be talking with us at about 4:40. He is the voice of the BG Falcons. So we want to stay in basketball hot and heavy after the Super Bowl and all of the NFL talk and everything else. We do want to stay in the NBA. And speaking of hot, that would describe the Detroit Pistons. Red hot, 4 straight wins, 3 in a row with Blake Griffin, who he's just seems to be having the time of his life. He had 21, 9 boards, and 6 assists last night in a blowout win over the Blazers. And Andre Drummond just feasting as well with his new big front court running mate, who is such a dominating presence that he commands so much defensive attention, Andre Drummond, with another monster double-double of 17 and 17. His rebounding statistics just continue to climb. About a couple of weeks ago, he was at 14 a game scoring and about 14 rebounds. Now he's at 15 and 15.4. I mean, he's starting to approach rebounding statistics the likes of which we used to see with Wilt and Russell. And I know that's goofy sounding, but in all seriousness, I mean, I think Barkley might have had one year in which he had 15 boards a game. Rodman used to have a ton of boards, obviously, as well, but Andre Drummond doing some great things. We're going to talk a little Pistons basketball coming up with Steve Hinson. I understand he is there now. So Steve Hinson, DetroitBadBoys.com, joining us once again right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, to break it down. Hey, Steve, how are you?
Oh, doing well. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for the time. Appreciate that. Sorry, I didn't know you were there already. Okay, Steve, I want to talk. We played a clip there that you may not have heard because you weren't on hold yet. We played a clip there at the top of the hour of Coach Van Gundy after the game last night talking about the assists and talking about how contagious it can be when the ball is moving as well as they were moving it last night. That's an understatement. 36 assists on 44 field goals last night. That's not easy to do in an NBA game. Six players had at least 12 points. You've got a bona fide superstar now there in Blake Griffin. And I'm not saying he's LeBron James, Kevin Durant level superstar, but he is superstar level, certainly much more than anybody they have had, in this current iteration of the Pistons. And yet, rather than relying on that one superstar, the ball is moving around maybe better than it has all season. How do you explain that tremendous unselfishness, even though there's a star player that you might think you want to feed?
I think that Blake Griffin's mentality and his willingness to move the ball may be part of that as well. If we look back at that Miami game,
the ball Steve, well. Are you still there?
Close. Oh, yes. Can you hear me?
Your phone started to die out on us. I don't know if you're moving or not, but your cell started to die, so we'll try it again. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's all right.
So against the Heat, Blake really helped close that game out with his shot wasn't falling all game for it, but down the stretch he had a terrific pass down to Andre Drummond, and then on to really seal it, he took his man off the dribble and found Ish in the corner, and really his passing was what helped close that game out. And so it really seems from the best guy on the team to if you want to call someone the worst, that everybody's just dialed into this passing style of offense.
Well, we'll just call him the last guy on the bench, the guy at the end
of
the bench,
rather
than the worst guy. But yeah, and it's funny, you talk about that pass. Blake Griffin comes to the Pistons from Lob City, where he was usually on the receiving end of the lobs because he's one of the great leapers in the league, and instead he's throwing lobs to Andre Drummond. How do you explain, or can you explain, the chemistry these two found, almost literally from game one? They're only three games in now, but they seem to just play and connect so well together.
I don't really know. I mean, maybe it does help that that Blake Griffin's coming from a similar style in DeAndre Jordan over in L.A. It's not like he was playing next to a guy like Ryan Anderson or anything like that, but someone who Drummond, he probably does a little more on offense than Jordan does, but, you throw a lob to one guy, it's they're going to go get it. So,
Steve, you still with us?
The way this is transitioned.
Yeah, we keep having your phone cut out there for about 2 or 3 seconds at a time, so I apologize to our listeners for that. We'll try to, I don't know if we can do anything about it. I don't know what kind of a signal we're going to get, but we will continue the best we can. Four in a row. There was a period of time during the 8-game losing streak, which was snapped when they beat the Cavaliers. No big deal now because everybody beats the Cavaliers. But there was a period of time where it looked like the season was going off the rails. Out of the playoffs, kind of off the rails, which would have been simply unacceptable. And this is prior to the trade, of course. And now with the 4-game winning streak, and as we talk about, the development of the chemistry between Griffin and Drummond and Griffin and everybody, now it seems like there is like a whole new, rebirth of energy there, I think, for Pistons fans as well as the Pistons themselves that have me asking a different question, not just can they make the playoffs, and now they find themselves tied for the 8th spot. But how high do you think in the second half of the season, based on the cast now and based on the strength or relative weakness of the Eastern Conference, how high do you think they can climb by the time we get all of the seedings done?
Well, there's an interesting caveat in there. Jackson comes back healthy, and then that could be a whole nother level. If we are thinking that that Reggie Jackson may not come back completely smoothly, and then, you know, that's another question. But with a healthy Reggie Jackson, earlier in the season, they were able to go toe-to-toe with just about any team in the league. So you see the Cavs certainly reeling, and so the top two are playing pretty well in the Celtics and Raptors, but outside of them, anybody looks vulnerable. So it's the type of thing where round one certainly looks looks doable for the Pistons, just depending on the matchup that they could land into. But it's kind of funny you mentioned that with the last time I was on the program was about 2 weeks ago, and we were in the middle of that terrible losing streak, and right. The conversation was more about how boring this team was and how dead in the water they were. And so this is a much more fun conversation, isn't it?
Well, you know, you're 100% right, and they were every bit as boring as they were bad during that streak. I mean, mm-hmm. There was just no reason to really pay a lot of attention. Nobody was exciting. Nobody was playing with any kind of an energy that would make you, that would make you want to watch. And then the losses started to pile up on top of one another, and it really was boring. But you know, what they've done here is made a trade for one of the most exciting players in the NBA. And as I said, you know, he might not be Kawhi, he might not be Russell Westbrook or those kinds of guys, but Blake Griffin is at that, you know, I don't know, you want to call it the next level down of superstar. I don't know if you want to do tiers like you can in the NFL with quarterbacks, but he's one of the most exciting players in the NBA. And in some ways, he's one of the more controversial players because he either develops people who love him or people who hate him, but he makes it fun. And you know, you add an exciting player to a bunch of victories, and I think it's anything but boring right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And well, and one of the things that a lot of us were wringing our hands about when he's a good player and kind of underrated, he's a really versatile scorer. We were wondering if power forward wasn't the problem for the Pistons. And so was Blake going to be good enough to really move the needle for the season? And the early returns definitely seem to point toward that he's, yes.
You're cutting out on us again a little bit there. Steve Hinson is our guest on DetroitBadBoys.com. I don't know if you're in a big metal building or a shed or something, but I'm sorry about that.
It's Colorado out here. Sorry about that. We usually do it on the landline, and so I apologize.
No worries. We'll do the best we can. No apologies, because we appreciate you coming on anyway. Jim Cushion wants to get in on the conversation. Jimmy?
You know, and I know we're early into this, guys, only three games in with Blake Griffin. I agree with you, Steve, that the early returns look good. But in those early returns, what are we seeing about some of the other guys taking a hold on where they're now going to be in this team? Reggie Bullock, Stanley Johnson feel like they're both now starters for the duration. We know the Ish Smith, Reggie Jackson thing, but even off the bench, legs to Galloway, Anthony Tolliver, and the draft pick Luke Kennard have all been producing. Now that we're three games in, what are you seeing from some of these role players fitting into this new dynamic?
Well, one thing, let's all hope that we age as gracefully as Anthony Tolliver. I mean, some of the dunks he's thrown down lately have just been pretty dynamite, right?
No doubt.
And well, and Stanley Johnson has certainly been playing with a whole lot of fresh energy. He's looked way more aggressive than he has in years now. Luke Kennard seems to be settling on in. One interesting dynamic has been with Dwight Bikes going down, Langston Galloway jumping into the rotation again. And personally, I see why Bikes has been getting the playing time ahead of Galloway with his ability to get into the lane, but Galloway's ability to shoot really has been a nice addition these past couple games.
No question about that. We're talking about the Pistons with Steve Hinson of DetroitBadBoys.com. The Pistons are on a roll. They've won four in a row. Blake Griffin, three in a row, and really things only getting better. I asked you a few minutes ago about you know, where they could, how high they could climb in the East. And, you know, obviously when it comes to a playoff series, it really depends on your matchup. No question about that. But looking at the rest of the East, looking at the struggles is an understatement. I could probably grab a thesaurus and look for some better words, but the Cavaliers are a wreck. And not only are they losing, They're pointing fingers. Isaiah Thomas doesn't like being called out as being part of the problem. He says he's shouldering too much of the blame. LeBron James is slacking and loafing and being lazy and not leading. Ty Lue, some people are calling for his job. Cavaliers are in trouble, and I don't think it's just a little January, now come February swoon. I think it's much, much deeper than that. So taking a look at the defending conference champion Cavs, as well as the conference leading Celtics, the rise of the Toronto Raptors, who are the biggest threats in the East, do you think, to come out of the East, teams that Detroit might have to fend off in a potential postseason matchup?
Well, you know, every year I've slept on the Cavs and bought into their problems that they have this time of year, and I still think that there may be a route to the Cavs being the team to come out of the East. It probably starts with Isaiah Thomas remembering how to put the ball in the hoop and Derrick Rose never stepping on the floor again, but there still seems to be a route that the Cavs may be able to be the team, but the two top teams are clearly pretty pecking order, 1A and 1B, and the Raptors and Celtics. And then after that, everything just seems kind of wide open. Kind of look for the Bucks to keep putting everything together, but that just hasn't happened. And with Giannis getting himself hurt, and then John Wall also losing some time in Washington, mm-hmm. it seems like the maybe three or four spot. Who is the best, the third or fourth best team in the Eastern Conference? That's kind of wide open for grabs. And so
I agree.
The Pistons probably don't have enough time to get their seating up to where they're going to be competing for that. But if you're looking at the third best team, fourth best team going into the playoffs, that could be a interesting spot to be in.
I think you're 100% right. I think the East is the West. That's weak East. I think the East is that weak right now, and I think it is absolutely wide open for one of those middle seeds, maybe even in the top half of the brackets, so that you could get home court advantage for at least the first round of the playoffs. It is certainly in play as we get closer to the trading deadline, and we'll see. Some things could change, obviously, if trades are made, involving some of those teams at the top of the conference right now, but certainly the opportunity is there for the Pistons, the way things look as of today. Steve Henson, read him and all of his colleagues at DetroitBadBoys.com, a part of SBNation.com. Steve, good to talk to you, my friend. I look forward to catching up with you again real soon.
Same here. Thanks, guys.
You got it. All right, there you go. So that's Steve Henson. I promised you I would do this before the bottom of the hour. So I want to do this now because we're going to get a quick time out here. We have to make room for our guest. I told you we're going to talk MAC basketball as we always do on Tuesdays. Usually Coach Michael Huger of Bowling Green is our guest. He's got a family thing today, so Todd Walker going to pinch hit for him, the voice of the Falcons. But before we get to college basketball, we're going to bridge pro basketball to them with golf tickets. How's that sound? I got another pair of tickets for you. The golf show, the Toledo Golf Show at Tam O'Shanter is coming up on the 16th through the 18th, and I got a pair of tickets. Okay, I'm lying. Cushlin has a pair of tickets in his hands. He's going to be the one answering the phones anyway, so that's all that matters. How about instead of a par four or par five like I've been doing the last couple of days, Cush, how about we get the caller number that I would get on a par five? Seven. Let's go to a seven. And maybe on a par four on a bad day.
Yeah.
Caller number 7, 866-240-1065. Caller number 7, 866-240-1065. We'll send you to the golf show. We've got a bottom of the hour local sports center coming up next. And then BG basketball with the voice of the Falcons, Todd Walker. That'll be coming up next right here on the
four. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the Extravaganza, final segment here of this Tuesday edition. Time to talk some college basketball. We always like to talk weekly with Rockets and Falcons, and today is our Bowling Green Falcon Day. Couldn't catch up with Coach Huger this week. Of course, they have a couple of games, one of them being tonight at Ball State, then back to Stroh Center on Saturday against Eastern Michigan, coming off a week last week where they won two in a row. And to help us break all these Falcon things down, we once again welcome in. We've had him back on before, and happy to have him back on again. The voice of the Bowling Green Falcons, Todd Walker, joins us. Good afternoon, Todd. How you doing?
Hey, Jim, doing good.
Excellent, excellent. Glad to hear it. Ball State tonight, 7 o'clock, the tip-off time. Catch it over, of course, on Talk Radio 100.7. Falcons coming off an impressive week. A couple of wins at home last week against Ohio and Kent State. Two traditional, I guess you could say, powers in this conference, both having some down years, but the Falcons were able to take care of some business.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of Ohio. They're really banged up and they're struggling. But Kent State was coming in off a win over Buffalo, which was probably the most impressive win of the season. Buffalo had yet to lose in MAC play up to that point. So I think Saturday's win over Kent State was really a big win for Bowling Green. The Flashes were really riding high, feeling good, and came into Stroh Center and built a 19-point lead late in the first half, and Bowling Green came back to beat them. That's one of the better wins this team has had this season.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. And, of course, the Kent State win you mentioned over Buffalo, just yet another sign of what this conference can do to anybody, even if they're supposedly really, really good, which in theory Buffalo is. They're still at the top of the league. So an impressive then game from, as you're pointing out, you know, a Bowling Green point of view, Justin Turner with 20, DeMaggio Wiggins 13-9 in this one. Also got 12 off the bench from Caldwell. Nice to see the extra bench production in this one.
Yeah, you know, Rod was coming off the bench the last couple of games. And, you know, it's after starting for basically the last year and a half to come off the bench, really challenged by Coach Huger to be more productive. And, boy, Rod was on Saturday, 12 points, 4 assists, no turnovers in 26 minutes. So you're right, that was really nice to see. And otherwise, Bowling Green didn't get a whole lot off the bench until late from Matt Fox. But Roderick coming in gave him some real punch.
Yeah, he absolutely did. And what does it say for this Falcons team, a team that's trying to, you know, turn a corner? They're now 14-9 overall, 500 in league play, but really in the conference standings, especially after Buffalo and Toledo, it's all jumbled up. And, of course, that's significant. You want to be able to avoid that first-round home-road thing and go straight to the queue. For the Falcons, though, this is coming after a three-game skid, two of them on the road, one of them getting blown out in the battle of I-75 basketball style at Savage. So how important is it to then turn around, get a 16-point win at home against a struggling Ohio team, and then coming off their win against Buffalo, even though they're 12-11, regardless of that overall, to then come back and do what they did against Kent State? How important is that to turn things around? There's still a lot of basketball left.
Yeah, I think the Kent State game really was, I believe, the beginning of somewhat of a revelation for the team, because not only had Toledo blown them out, but Bowling Green had been absolutely massacred at Northern Illinois in the game before that. So they were coming off two recent whippings, and that Kent State looked to be a repeat. But instead of giving in and letting it happen, the team fought back and actually won the game. So I think that was maybe as significant as just getting a league win and defending home court and all of that. I think it was maybe more significant that the team didn't allow that game to get away from them as they had with Northern Illinois and Toledo. Instead, they managed to bow their necks late in the first half, cut it down to 7 at halftime, and then really dominated the second half.
And you know, this makes me think of something that at the couple of times I've talked with Coach Huger so far this season, you know, he keeps stressing to me that, you know, we're still a young team. And so add that aspect to it. You know, a young team, you get blown out in a couple games like that, you could mentally pack it in, as it were, or go through the motions. They didn't do that. So add in the fact that, especially, again, according to Coach Huger himself, that this is a younger team. How important is it to suffer those kind of defeats and then show that, yeah, we can then turn this back around, play good basketball, and put W's back up there?
Yeah, I think every experience this team goes through is a learning experience. And for most of the guys, if not all of them, it's a first-time thing as, you know, full-time starters. If you look at our typical starting lineup, the only player with a lot of experience is DeMaggio Wiggins. I mean, you're starting Justin Turner, who played in three games last year and was hurt. Dylan Frey and Rod Caldwell started some last year as freshmen, but they're only sophomores. Derek Koch is a true freshman. And, you know, Nelly Cummings plays a lot. He's a true freshman. This is, I believe, the 350th least experienced team in the nation, something like that, according to the Ken Pomeroy numbers. And well, it's 337, I see here, out of 351. So, yeah, we're young. So a lot of these guys are, for the first time, figuring this thing out as you go. And, you know, we're in the middle of the conference season now. And this is, even though, like I said, guys like Dylan and Rod started last year, it was really later in the season. So most of the way, or at least partway through the MAC before they really became the full-time starter. So now you're having to grind through the whole season. And it's a whole different feel for guys doing it for the first time. And, you know, they're, each and every game is some kind of different experience that hopefully they're building on. And when you look at the starting lineup, you don't see any seniors. There's only one senior on the team, and that's Matt Fox. So this group is certainly taking some lessons as they go along here, hopefully.
We're talking with the voice of the Bowling Green Falcons, Todd Walker, our weekly Falcons segment here on the Extravaganza. And I keep coming back and keep thinking of that because, you know, mediocre, I suppose, is one way of putting overall the Falcons in recent years. And Michael Huger has tried to put an extra emphasis on getting some of these decent recruits in there. And the last couple of classes, the last two really, since, again, this is a younger type of squad, are starting to show some things. And then, you, as you pointed out, in terms of upperclassmen, you're going to have Wiggins back for a senior year next year, and Fox would be the only graduating senior. Therefore, are you basically, what I'm asking, Todd, is are we starting to see the true overall turnarounds based on some of these guys that are now coming in to this overall program to kind of take them up a notch in this conference and overall? Are we really starting to see the beginnings of this season? Because that's kind of the way I felt watching this team at times.
Yeah, you know, you watch this team and have watched this team, it's clear that we have more talent. And I think that's exactly what's the plan is. This group of guys is the group that's going to get Bowling Green back toward the top of the Mid-American Conference. And, you know, frankly, if they don't, then, you know, you may be starting over in a couple of years. You know how this works.
Mm-hmm.
So, this talent upgrade has been significant. I think Justin Turner, even right now with some of the great players in this conference, I think he's a top 10 player in this league. If he's not all MAC, first or second team, it'll be a travesty. And you look at some of these other guys, we're starting to get on par talent-wise. Now it's all about fitting it together, getting that hard edge that you need to grind through the MAC schedule, get some of those tough wins instead of letting games get away from you, and this team can turn the corner. I think really that if you could really get into Coach Huger's brain, I think that the thinking is that next year would be the year that they could really fully contend for a MAC championship. You'll have all these guys a year older. You'll be able to bring Wiggins back for a senior year in the post. As you said, Matt Fox will be the only departure. So I think it's reasonable to say that next year should be a year that you really vault toward the top of the league. But this year is a year that you learn how to get there and hopefully have a successful season as well. And, you know, right now they're 5-5 in the league, and I think if you'd asked most folks before the season if this team could be 500 in the league when all is said and done, they would say that was a successful building season, and, you know, they're in a position to be able to do that.
And the next building block comes up tonight. Always a tricky place to play out there in Muncie. And Ball State's having a decent upward swing year themselves. They're 6-4 actually in the league, one game, so one game better, and even overall record at 14-9. What can you tell us about the Cardinals?
Well, just to clarify, Ball State's 5-5 in the league.
Oh, they are. Oh, you know, I read the wrong line. Yeah. I saw the wrong one.
That's okay. But, you know, they had a great non-conference season. I know a lot of people remember they beat Notre Dame on a last-second shot. Also, I did the same thing to Valpo. But Ball State's had a little bit of turmoil with their roster. They dismissed one of their veteran players. And I think right now they're a little bit wounded coming off a 58-41 loss at Eastern Michigan Saturday. They really laid an egg after a couple of great wins, the double overtime win over Akron. Then they won at Toledo, which was a huge win for them. Then they go on the road to Eastern and put up 41 points. So I think this is going to be a pretty angry Ball State team. You know, this is a veteran team, unlike Bowling Green. They've got a lot of guys that have been playing for a while in this league, and that loss at Eastern is not going to sit well with them, I'm sure. So BG is going to have to come out, and I think early in this game they're going to have to be ready for some pretty intense Cardinals and hopefully not dig a big hole like they have done a couple of times this year. You know, it's one thing to come home, come back at home. It's tougher to do on the road. So I think the first 5-10 minutes tonight will be very important.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, yeah, it's Ball State, Western, and the Falcons all at 5-5, Miami and Kent State at 6-4. So technically speaking, to look ahead kind of things, Miami and Kent State have the inside track for the 3 and the 4 spot. That will, of course, you know, avoid that first round. But that means, you know, as we've always seen, jumbled up there in the middle of this conference. It's the Bowling Green Falcons taking on Ball State tonight on the road in Muncie, 6:30 the coverage time, 7 o'clock the tip-off. You can hear Todd and all the call over on Talk Radio 100.7. Last question before I let you go. I want to switch gears real quick here to the football side of things. On the grounds that you obviously, you know, see this team play and call all their games, of course. And we had, even though we had that early signing thing back in December, well, of course, tomorrow is the National Signing Day itself, so a lot of it becomes more and more official as to what the 2018 Falcon football recruiting class will look like. Give us a little breakdown of some of the things that have jumped out at you so far on some of the guys that have or are rumored to finish off the commits tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, they did sign quite a few guys on the first signing day, the so-called early signing day, back right before Christmas. I think as far as tomorrow, of course, everything is unofficial, but based on all the reporting that you see and the things from the recruits themselves, I think the big prize tomorrow in my mind is Ravion Hargrove, who is set to sign with Bowling Green tomorrow. From all indications, he's out of Trotwood Madison High School down there in Dayton, a powerhouse football program. I saw him play personally in the playoffs. He is ultra quick. I think the only thing that's keeping him from the Big Ten is he's 5'7". We've seen at Bowling Green guys at 5'7" have great careers and go on to do great things for BG. I think that's a huge pickup. He's going to join Andrew Clare in the BG backfield, and I think Hargrove's got a chance to play next year as a freshman. He's going to be a big playmaker in that offense moving forward. I think that's the big pickup that I'm at least seeing in reporting that Bowling Green will get tomorrow. I think they're going to add some other guys, obviously, but that'll be the headline grabber, I think. And this is a pretty highly rated class in the top three or four by no matter whose measurements you look at. So I think Coach Jenks and company have done another good job with a recruiting class. And a few JUCOs in there that are, and a few guys that are already enrolled at BGSU that are going to be counted on defensively, especially to shore things up over there.
Yeah, it's going to be important to see how this class, and quite frankly, the second year of last year's class, start doing some things out there on the field to turn what we know was a disappointing season, to say the least, a little bit around for next year. Todd Walker, he is the voice of the Bowling Green Falcons. You'll hear him again later on this evening, 6:30 coverage time, 7 o'clock the tip-off, Falcons at Ball State on the basketball court. That game, of course, over at Talk Radio 100.7, and thanks so much, as always, for the time. Have a great call tonight. We'll catch up with you down the line.
Thanks, Jim. Always appreciate it.
Voice of the Bowling Green Falcons, Todd Walker, taking the time. And, yeah, we're obviously going to get a lot more into the various recruiting things on the program tomorrow, trying to line up a couple of people to talk about that, maybe from the bigger side. But, no, he's got an interesting point there. To be able to put this guy with Clare, the Trotwood Madison prospect, out there with Clare in the backfield is going to be pretty huge. I think he's right. He's probably going to see some more or less significant playing time, I think, this fall for the Falcons on the football field. It's good to have, you know, one of the higher ranked, and he correctly pointed out, no matter what, which one of those like rivals, you know, whatever that you may go to, because there are all sorts of different ones, as we know, for those kind of rankings. It's important to get those guys, you know, out there, see what kind of talent you may have. And yeah, the height thing, yeah, that is completely believable. A couple inches taller, and he's in the Big Ten. I'm sure of that flat two from what I've read up on this kid. So, yeah, he's going to be a little shorter than most. But when things like that happens, the big boys don't pay as much attention to you. So down to a place like Bowling Green, you're able to fall. And, you know, again, important to get these guys out there. We know how disappointing the season was on the field a season ago. But if you can get some of this talent in there on both sides of the ball, and it needs to be on both sides of the football, then you'll be able to take those steps forward to getting back towards the top of this league. As for the basketball side of things, I'm still, I don't want to say stuck on, but it kind of is, thinking about, you know, how this is a young team and they are improving, and we're seeing that as a 500 record, you know, turning around, getting two wins, and especially the way they did. You know, when you get blown out like that, especially with the second of the two blowouts being your rivalry game, even though, yeah, we only, you know, only played once this year, we know, we're not having that argument. The point is, you go to your rival's building and get just the doors blown off you like that. Give up triple digits, which, unless you're going to two or three overtimes in college basketball, or you're playing that old Iowa Marymount kind of style from the late 80s, unless it's one of those two things, you should never be giving up triple digits in a college basketball game. It means things were going wrong all over the place for you. And a younger team, that kind of thing can, and we've seen it plenty of times play out in the past, where it sticks with you in a bad way that you know, affects you in games going forward. Even though Ohio's having a down year, and yes, they beat Buffalo, Kent State is only 12-11, so relative for them, they're having a down year too. So, but regardless of them having down years or not, these are still more power type of teams in this league than the teams you see on the brackets more often than not in March, even though they're having down years, to then turn around and play well and get those wins and have the type of comeback where, again, this is that mental thing as a young team. Okay, we got to win against Ohio, but they're having a down year. And now, you know, Kent State's doing this to us, and oh my goodness, it's the Toledo and the Northern Illinois game all over again. And you can go into bad mental places. But they turned it around and were able to get the win. This is, as Todd said, as Coach Huger in our past conversations has alluded to, this is still a team that's learning and a team that's a work in progress. And I think Todd's right. You know, no microphones kind of thing, off the record, if you will. Coach Huger would probably admit, yeah, next year is the real year we're gunning for to make some noise. But that doesn't mean you can't do it right now. There's a jumbled mess right now in the Mid-American Conference standings. Top four, as we know, for the conference tournament go to Cleveland, so you don't have to deal with that home road, even though the Falcons are, unlike past years, in a position to at least host that game as opposed to go on the road. You still don't want to have to play that game if you don't have to. Buffalo and Toledo are going to get two of the spots. Then you have Miami, Kent State at 6-4, Western, Ball State, and the Falcons all at 5-5. And then there's, I believe, a couple teams at 4-6. Yeah, Central and Eastern are both 4-6 in the league. So you have all these teams. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's 7 teams all within 2 games of each other. Top two, which right now would be Miami and Kent State, get to go straight to Cleveland, and the others have to deal with that first round game. Minimum position I'm looking for this Falcons team as they go forward, and this is noting the fact that there are 2 Buffaloes, not just 1, 2 Buffaloes still coming up on the schedule. You get Kent State, Akron, and Ohio all again, and then after Ball State, by the way, it's Saturday against afternoon against Eastern Michigan, and a week from today at home against Western Michigan. You could turn these things around and make up that final game in the standings in these last 8 games of the year, you could put yourself in a position to at least go straight to Cleveland, or at worst, host that first round game. But making it straight to the queue for the MAC tournament, given where this program has been in the last bunch of years, is a nice step forward, because that means you're the top 4 team in the entire league. And it's these little steps that if a young team can take and succeed at, it's all the more better when they can go into next year saying, hey, we got that 1 year under our belt. Look what we did. Now we're going to take that next step and really mess with some people here in the Mid-American Conference. It's on the right path, and it's so, so very nice to see. That's going to do it for this edition of the extravaganza here on this Tuesday. Yeah, the Falcons, they're on the docket tonight at Ball State, 6:30 the cover time, 7 o'clock the tip-off time over on Talk Radio 100.7. Michigan is also in action, by the by, 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock tip-off there at Northwestern. That's over at 98.3 Nash Icon. And, of course, here on the ticket, we got some high school basketball for you. The crew will be out there at Whitmer for St. John's against Whitmer, 7 o'clock the coverage time right here on 106.5 the ticket. So a lot of fun basketball coming up for you tonight. But stick around. We switch gears to Drive Time coming up next. And I say switch gears, I'm in for Mike Miller today. And we're going to be talking more about some overall college basketball, the NBA, little last recaps on that Super Bowl win for the Eagles, and so much more in some of your phone calls. So absolutely hope you stick around for that one. Quick timeout. I'm in for Mike Miller coming up next on Drive Time. Bob and I will talk to you tomorrow for a Wednesday edition, a signing day edition. See you then.